This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Our guest today is Scott Anderson, a National Park Ranger in Mount Rainier's National Park, who is one of the park's biological science technicians. Scott is the amphibian crew lead at Mount Rainier, and he graduated from the University of Washington and has since worked in Montana, Oregon, California, and Idaho for the U.S. Forest Service. He's worked for the National Park Service and at the University of Washington and the University of Oregon as a biological technician. He's worked on plant and animal projects over the length of his career, and he's a proficient botanist as well as an aquatic specialist. So welcome, Scott. We're glad to be talking to you, and hope things are going well down at Mount Rainier.
Thank you, Jay, and thanks for having me on your program.
Okay. So tell us how long you've been working at the park, Mount Rainier.
Yeah, so I started at Mount Rainier in 2009. So I've been there about 15 years.
So why was Mount Rainier made a national park in 1899? Why was it set aside as a park by Congress?
Right. So that's a good question, and it's a rather involved question.
It was the fourth national park, I believe.
The fifth. So Mount Rainier is fifth national park. The impetus for it becoming a park was mostly from locals in both Tacoma and Seattle. The way I understand it, there people who visited the park who had an interest in it. The railroad was in part responsible, and I would, if folks are interested in this topic, I recommend going to the National Park website, because it's a really good description of how it came to be. But it's quite involved.
Well, the National Park,
it was mostly local interest.
The National Park Service was founded in 1916, so there were about 17 years that it had to be administered by someone. Was that the Army?
Well, many of the parks were administered by the Army, but I'm not sure about Rainier. That's a question I actually don't know, and
okay.
I believe it could be the Forest Service, because the original park was it came to be right after the it was on Forest Service land.
Uh-huh.
A lot of it. So
a lot of the parks were, yeah. So you're the biological science technician and the amphibian crew lead at Mount Rainier. Talk about those. Talk about the work that you do.
Right. So I am one of. There's quite a few of us biological science technicians who do a lot of work at Mount Rainier. I'm in the aquatics group, so we are focused on aquatic resources. There's also a vegetation crew, and a wildlife crew, as well as folks who work in archaeology. So I mainly am focused on aquatics resources, and particularly amphibians, as well as I do some work with fish and air quality and soundscapes.
So, how many species of amphibians do you find in Mount Rainier Park?
So, Mount Rainier, we have 14 species that we know of that occur in the park. There are seven lintic breeding species. So that's those species that lay their eggs in still waters. Then we have three stream breeding species and four terrestrial species. And I can go into some more details if you like on that too.
Well, we don't usually think of Mount Rainier as a place where to look for amphibians, so because of the 14,000 foot peak. So where in the park is a good habitat for them to exist?
Right. So they're actually below 10,000 feet or so. They're pretty prevalent within the park, and I think of Mount Rainier as the land of water, because of the glaciers, and we have a lot of water in the park.
Lakes and streams?
Lakes, rivers, wetlands, ponds, headwater streams, there's a few species that are quite ubiquitous in the park. I'll name one of the Cascade Frog.
Is a
frog that's found pretty much anywhere where you hike between from 3,000 feet up to 6,000 feet. You'll find Cascade frogs. And they inhabit wetlands, little streams, potholes, and lake shores. You'll see these frogs hopping around. And the more you look, the easier, the more you find them.
Do you have any idea of what the population number is?
No.
Yeah.
They're in Washington State. The Cascade Frog is apparently doing quite well. This species actually was proposed for listing on the Endangered Species Act, this is mainly due to its declining populations in California, which is at the southern end of its range.
So they're all around surrounding Mount Rainier, is that right?
That's correct. They're throughout the Cascade mountain range, all the way up.
What other species are prominent in the park?
Probably the other real prominent species would be the northwestern salamander. And so this is a pond breeding species that occurs in many of the lakes and ponds in Mount Rainier. So all the lakes at Mount Rainier originally had no fish. There's fish in the rivers and streams, but not in any of the lakes.
Oh, really?
And the northwestern salamander is essentially the top aquatic vertebrate predator in our lakes.
What are the particular identifying characteristics?
The adults, which you don't see too often, the terrestrial adults, after they metamorphose into a terrestrial adult, they spend a lot of their time in burrows under cover objects, logs and rocks. And primarily you would see them at night. But what you do see more commonly are the larvae, which are what you see in many of the lakes. You'll see their larvae and you'll see their egg masses. And one of the curious things about the northwestern salamander is that they're what's known as a facultative patomorph. So what this means is that the larvae will they don't always metamorphose into a terrestrial adult. Some will, due to genetic and environmental conditions, will retain their larval characteristics but become mature adults and spend their entire lives in their aquatic habitat.
Oh, that's...
And they get quite large, and those lakes that haven't been stocked with fish, they can sometimes be quite common, and you can just you'll see them in a lake, you know, along the shoreline if you're walking along. Yeah.
What are the unique identifying characteristics of the Cascade frog?
Probably the easiest thing to do is look at some pictures, but the adults are sort of a olive green. They can be kind of variable in color.
Uh-huh.
They typically have black spots on their back and prominent dorsolateral. They have dorsolateral ridges on either side of their back. They're quite distinctive, and they're about anywhere from the juveniles are about an inch to 2 inches and up to about 3.5 inches long.
So why are these amphibians important to the ecosystem in the park? What role do they play?
Right. So amphibians play an interesting role in that they can be both significant predators and prey for other animals. And they also, for those species, not all amphibians live in both aquatic and terrestrial environments, but many do. And so they move energy and material from a wetland habitat or aquatic habitat into the terrestrial environment. But they play significant roles as a prey species and predator.
Who preys upon these amphibians?
Everything from invertebrates, so in their larvae stage, dragonfly larvae, aquatic beetles, so other invertebrates, fish, other amphibians, birds, several mammal species. It's quite diverse.
Some road surveys were done probably six years ago. So what was the purpose of those road surveys?
Well, part of my work is involved with road construction.
Uh-huh.
And so whenever there's work on several of the road systems in the park, we, as a result of the National Environmental Policy Act, we conduct surveys to look at the impact that the work may have on the environment and the animals that may inhabit those environments adjacent to the road. So in the mid 2014 to 2016, we conducted numerous road surveys to identify hot spots along the road system where amphibians were utilizing the road. And what that has enabled us to do is to, when future road projects occur, we kind of know some of those locations where there may be amphibians present, and we have several mitigations that we can do to at least lessen the impacts to those amphibians.
You're talking about roadkill and mortalities, right?
Well, yes, that's the most direct. Yeah, roadkill from vehicles also impacts to roadside habitat and effects from, so there's culverts are everywhere, you know, within the park. And so replacing culverts can have impacts on amphibians, as well as bridge work.
So are there preventive measures that you can take to prevent roadkill?
There is some, yes. As far as like, there are things that we do, in the park, during construction projects, to prevent, animals, from either getting into the construction project and which may cause mortality. Some of that involves moving animals off the side of the road when there's intact habitat, the timing of some of the work will avoid working during rain events or at night.
Yeah.
And then as far as like the public goes, driving at night during spring or fall rains I don't advise that. Let's just put it that way.
So
if you want to, you know, you'd be surprised at how many amphibians sometimes on a warm fall rain at night. What happens is you will have amphibians moving from their breeding habitat to upland habitat, and quite frequently that can be on either side of a road, and so you'll have animals crossing the road during those rain events.
Are there plants in the park that amphibians depend upon?
Yeah, so that I would rephrase that question to say, are there habitats that, which include plants?
Yeah.
But, you know, what habitats do amphibians depend on? And one of the unique things about amphibians is they utilize typically several different types of habitat, which includes wetlands and wet meadows, which of course have you know, lots of wetland plants, sedges and rushes and other aquatic or, you know, wetland species. But they also utilize upland habitat, like I mentioned earlier, which can be both forested habitats and riparian habitat along both streams and lake shores, as well as more specific habitats, beets and talus slope. Certain terrestrial species utilize those habitats.
So you also monitor fish. How many species of fish do you find in Mount Rainier National Park?
We have several salmonid species at Mount Rainier that inhabit the park's rivers, as well as sculpin. We have three species of sculpin, whitefish, and of the salmonid, probably the one that's a park Mount Rainier's focused on the most is bull trout, which is a federally threatened species. And right now we're in the spawning season for bull trout.
Uh-huh.
And they're coming up into the park, those that are sea run. We have both resident sea run and fluvial bull trout. And the fluvial bull trout are those that they may inhabit larger river systems, but when they they spawn, they travel upstream into smaller creeks, and then the sea run individuals come up from the sound, typically at Mount Rainier from Puget Sound, and then we have resident trout that are up in small, bull trout that are up in small streams.
Do you have any salmon coming up the rivers into the park?
Chinook have been found in the park, as well as coho and pink salmon, and then we also have steelhead as well.
Are fish populations as numerous they should be?
I suspect, I can't give you any hard evidence on that right off the top of my head, but I suspect not. All but one river is dammed that comes out of the park, you know, that flows outside the park.
Right. So
that is a hindrance to spawning fish.
I see. Do any of the aquatic species differ by the altitude at which you find them, below 10,000 feet? Are there zones?
Sure, yes. Well, we have two closely related frogs, northern red-legged frog and the Cascades frog. One is typically found below 3,000 feet, like from sea level to 3,000. I mean, the park doesn't go down to sea level, of course, but from the boundary up to about 3,000 feet, we find northern red-legged frogs. And above 3,000, we then see Cascade frogs.
Uh-huh.
And there's a little overlap there. Other species, there might be some altitudinal restrictions, and that might have more have to do with habitat as well.
So you monitor various aspects of environmental conditions like water quality and air quality and lakes. What does that monitoring involve?
Yeah, so one of the things I work with or work on is we have a long-term lake monitoring project. We have six lakes that we monitor every year at the park, and we're one of three parks that monitor that are part of this program. Both Olympic and North Cascades also monitor. They have several long-term lakes, and we look at the chemistry, lake chemistry, and then zooplankton and chlorophyll, and also amphibian and fish presence in those lakes.
And that's
been going on since 2008, roughly.
Oh, I see. You do some soundscape monitoring, too. What does that involve?
Well, we monitor the ambient sound levels within the park, and it's part of the night sky and natural sounds division. And basically, we set up sound monitoring systems at various locations in the park. We leave them up. They run continuously for approximately a month. And then we can then analyze that data and look at the percentage of time that you hear natural ambient sounds versus anthropogenic sounds, which typically in the park are mostly aircraft.
Oh, really?
And automobiles as well.
You're right, yeah.
Vehicles.
So what's the effect of climate change on wildlife in the park?
Yeah, that's a hard one to answer. But what we have seen, what I can say is that I think the impacts will be, like from my point of view, from an aquatic resource point of view, we have seen changes in, or what may happen is we may see changes in the length of the hydro period in wetlands, especially intermediate wetlands and more ephemeral wetlands. So the period in which they retain water will has shortened. And so you may see changes from like an intermediate wetland, which typically holds water throughout the summer, turning into an ephemeral wetland that typically then dries up towards the end of summer. And that may have changes with both in vegetation and also what species might be present in the aquatic habitat.
Mm-hmm.
Those amphibian species that that utilize aquatic habitats for breeding may not have a long enough hydro period to metamorphose into a terrestrial adult, so they'll essentially dry up or die prior to metamorphosis.
So is there some academic research that's going on in the park by some of the universities in the area?
Yes, that's continually happening. Several universities around the Northwest are involved in projects at Mount Rainier.
You know what they're trying to find out?
I'll just briefly mention a group out of University of Washington, which did a study not too long ago on looking at wetlands and trying to model the effects of climate change on different types of wetlands. That one of the big key findings in their models was, which I just touched on prior, was that intermediate wetlands will probably, in one of their models, show that intermediate wetlands will likely, their hydro periods will shorten and they'll become more like an ephemeral wetland.
Awesome. Well, Scott, we have a half hour goes quickly, so we've run out of time. So I want to thank you very much for the interview and wish you well and what the work you do.
You very much, Jay. Yeah, I appreciate it.
It's been Scott Anderson, National Park Ranger in Mount Rainier National Park. He's one of the park's biological science technicians. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to js-wilderness.com and see additional features of our website. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.